Reacher was three-quarters through with the bags. He stopped and rested against the pickup door. Was he smart?
Smart enough, I guess, Stephen said. He did well in school, without exactly setting the world on fire. We had a few kids here over the years gone to be lawyers or doctors or whatever. One of them went to NASA, a bit younger than Victor and me. Victor was smart enough, but he had to work to get his grades, as I recall.
Reacher started with the bags again. He had filled the farthest shelves first, which he was glad about, because his forearms were starting to burn.
Was he ever in any kind of trouble?
Stephen looked impatient.
Trouble? You haven't been listening to me, mister. Victor was straight as an arrow, back when the worst kid would look like a complete angel today.
Six bags to go. Reacher wiped his palms and his pants. What was he like when you last saw him, between the two tours? Stephen paused to think about it.
A little older, I guess. I'd grown up a year, it seemed like he'd grown up five. But he was no different. Same guy. Still serious. Still earnest.
They gave him a parade when he came home, because he had a medal.
He was real embarrassed about it. Said the medal was nothing. Then he went away again. And he never came back.
How did you feel about that?
Stephen paused again. Pretty bad, I guess. This was a guy I'd known all my life. I'd have preferred him to come back, of course, but I was real glad he didn't come back in a wheelchair or something, like a lot of them did.
Reacher finished the work. He butted the last bag into position on the shelf with the heel of his hand and leaned on the post opposite Stephen.
What about the mystery?
About what happened to him.
Stephen shook his head and smiled sadly. There's no mystery. He was killed. This is about two old folks refusing to accept three unpleasant truths, is all.
Which are?
Simple, Stephen said. Truth one is their boy died. Truth two is he died out there in some godforsaken, impenetrable jungle where nobody will ever find him. Truth three is the government got dishonest around that time, and they stopped listing the MIAs as casualties, so they could keep the numbers reasonable. There were, what, maybe 10 boys on Vic's chopper when it went down? That's 10 names they kept off the nightly news. It was a policy, and it's too late for them to admit to anything now.
That's your take.
Sure is, Stephen said. The war went bad, and the government went bad with it. Hard enough for my generation to accept, let me tell you. You younger guys are probably more at home with it, but you better believe the old folk like the Hobies are never going to square up to it.
He lapsed into silence and glanced absently back and forth between the empty pickup and the full shelves.
That's a ton of cement you shifted. You want to come in and wash up and let me buy you a soda?
I need to eat, Reacher said. I missed lunch.
Stephen nodded. And then he smiled ruefully. Head south. There's a diner right after the train station. That's where we used to drink milkshakes. 9:30 Saturday night, thinking we were practically Frank Sinatra.
The diner had obviously changed many times since daring boys with baseball cards and the wheels of their bicycles had sipped milkshakes there on Saturday nights. Now it was a 70s-style eatery, low and square, a brick facade, green roof, with a 90s-style gloss in the form of elaborate neon signs in every window, hot pinks and blues. Reacher took the leather-bound folder with him and pulled the door and stepped into chilly air, smelling of Freon and burgers and the strong stuff they squirt on the tables before wiping them down. He sat at the counter, and a cheerful, heavy girl of 20-something boxed him in with flatware and a napkin, and handed him a menu card the size of a billboard with photographs of the food positioned next to the written descriptions. He ordered a half-pounder, Swiss, rare, slaw and onion rings, and made a substantial wager with himself that it wouldn't resemble the photograph in any way at all. Then he drank his iced water and got a refill before opening the folder. He concentrated on Victor's letters to his folks. There were 27 of them in total, 13 from his training postings and 14 from Vietnam. They bore out everything he'd heard from Ed Stephen,
Accurate grammar, accurate spelling, plain, terse phrasing. The same handwriting used by everybody educated in America between the 20s and the 60s, but with a backward slant. A left-handed person. None of the 27 letters ran more than a few lines over the page. A dutiful person. A person who knew it was considered impolite to end a personal letter on the first page. A polite, dutiful, left-handed, dull, conventional, normal person, solidly educated, but no kind of a rocket scientist. The girl brought him the burger. It was adequate in itself, but very different from the gigantic feast depicted in the photograph on the menu. The slaw was floating in whitened vinegar in a crimped paper cup, and the onion rings were bloated and uniform, like small brown automobile tires. The Swiss was sliced so thin it was transparent, but it tasted like cheese. The photograph, taken after the passing out parade down at Rucker, was harder to interpret. The focus was off, and the peak of his cap put Victor's eyes into deep shadow. His shoulders were back, and his body was tense. Bursting with pride, or embarrassed by his mother, it was hard to tell. In the end, Reacher voted for pride, because of the mouth. It was a tight line, slightly down at the edges, the sort of mouth that needs firm control from the facial muscles to stop a huge, joyful grin. This was a photograph of a guy at the absolute peak of his life so far, every goal attained, every dream realized. 2 weeks later, he was overseas. Reacher shuffled through the letters for the note from Mobile. It was written from a bunk before sailing, mailed by a company clerk in Alabama. Sober phrases, a page and a quarter. Emotions tightly checked. It communicated nothing at all. He paid the check and left the girl a $2 tip for being so cheerful. Would she have written home a page and a quarter of tight-ass nothingness the day she was sailing off to war? No. But she would never sail off to war. Victor's helicopter went down maybe 7 years before she was born, and Vietnam was just something she had suffered through in 11th grade history class. It was way too early to head straight back to Wall Street. Jody had said 7 o'clock, at least 2 hours to kill, minimum. He slid into the Taurus and put the air on high to blow the heat away. Then he flattened the Hertz map on the stiff leather of the folder and traced a route away from Brighton. He could take Route 9 south to the Bear Mountain Parkway, the Bear east to the Taconic south to the Sprain, and the Sprain would dump him out on the Bronx River Parkway. That road would take him straight down to the Botanical Gardens, which was a place he had never been, and a place he was pretty keen to visit. Marilyn got to her lunch a little after 3 o'clock. She had checked the cleaning crew's work before she let them leave, and they had done a perfect job. They had used the steam cleaner on the hall rug, not because it was dirty, but because it was the best way of raising up the dents in the pile left by the credenza's feet. The steam swelled the wool fibers, and after a thorough vacuuming, nobody was ever going to know a heavy piece of furniture had once rested there. She took a long shower and wiped out the stall with a kitchen towel to leave the tiling dry and shiny. She combed her hair and left it to air dry. She knew the June humidity would put a slight curl in it. Then she got dressed, which involved one garment only. She put on Chester's favorite thing, a dark pink silk sheath, which worked best with nothing on underneath. It came just above the knee, and although it wasn't exactly tight, it clung in all the right places, as if it had been made for her, which, in fact, it had been, although Chester wasn't aware of that. He thought it was just a lucky off-the-peg accident. She was happy to let him think that, not because of the money, but because it felt a little, well, brazen to admit to having such a sexy thing custom-made. And the effect on him was, frankly, brazen. It was like a trigger. She used it when she thought he needed rewarding, or deflecting. And he was going to need deflecting tonight. He was going to arrive home and find his house up for sale and his wife in charge. Any old way she looked at it, it was going to be a difficult evening, and she was prepared to use any advantage she could to get through it, brazen or not. She chose the Gucci heels that matched the sheath's color and made her legs look long. Then she went down to the kitchen and ate her lunch, which was an apple and a square of reduced fat cheese. And then she went back upstairs and brushed her teeth again and thought about makeup. Being naked under the dress and with her hair down in a natural style, the way to go was really no makeup at all. But she was prepared to admit she was just a little beyond being able to get away with that. So she set out on the long haul of making herself up so she would look like she hadn't troubled to. It took her 20 minutes, and then she did her nails, toes too, because she felt that counted when it was likely her shoes would be coming off early. Then she dabbed her favorite perfume on, enough to be noticed without being overwhelming. Then the phone rang. It was Cheryl.
Marilyn, she said, 6 hours on the market and you've got a nibble.
I have? But who and how?
I know, the very first day before you're even listed anywhere. Isn't it wonderful?
It's a gentleman who's relocating with his family, and he was cruising the area, getting a feel for it, and he saw your sign.
He came straight over here for the particulars. Are you ready? Can I bring him right over?
Wow. Right now?
Already? This is quick, isn't it? But, yes, I guess I'm ready. Who is it, Cheryl?
You think he's a serious buyer?
Definitely I do. And he's only here today. He has to go back west tonight.
Okay, well, bring him on over, I guess. I'll be ready. She realized she must have been rehearsing the whole routine unconsciously without really being aware of it. She moved fast, but she wasn't flustered. She hung up the phone and ran straight down to the kitchen and switched the oven on low. Spooned a heap of coffee beans onto a saucer and placed them on the middle shelf. Shut the oven door and turned to the sink. Dropped the apple core into the waste disposal and stacked the plate in the dishwasher. Wiped the sink down with a paper towel and stood back, hands on hips, scanning the room. She walked to the window and angled the blind until the light caught the shine on the floor.
Perfect, she said to herself.
She ran back up the stairs and started at the top of the house. She ducked into every room, scanning, checking, adjusting flowers, angling blinds, plumping pillows. She turned lamps on everywhere. She had read that to turn them on after the buyer was already in the room was a clear message the house was gloomy. Better to have them on from the outset, which was a clear message of cheerful welcome. Marilyn ran back down the stairs. In the family room, she opened the blind all the way to show off the pool. In the den, she turned on the reading lamps and tilted the blind almost closed to give a dark, comfortable look. Then she ducked into the living room. Shit, Chester's side table was still there, right next to where his armchair had been. How could she have missed that? She grabbed it two-handed and ran with it to the basement stairs. She heard Cheryl's car on the gravel. She opened the basement door and ran down and dumped the table and ran back up. Closed the door on it and ducked into the powder room. Straightened the guest towel and dabbed at her hair and checked herself in the mirror.
God!
She was wearing her silk sheath with nothing underneath. The silk was clinging to her skin. What the hell was this poor guy going to think? The doorbell rang. She was frozen. Did she have time to change? Of course not. They were at the door right now, ringing the bell. A jacket or something? The doorbell rang again. She took a breath and shook her hips to loosen the fabric and walked down the hall. Took another breath and opened the door. Cheryl beamed in at her, but Marilyn was already looking at the buyer. He was a tallish man, maybe 50 or 55, gray in a dark suit, standing side-on, looking out and back at the plantings along the driveway. She glanced down at his shoes, because Chester always said wealth and breeding shows up in the feet. These looked pretty good. Heavy Oxfords, polished to a shine. She started to smile. Was this going to be it? Sold within 6 hours? That would be a hell of a thing. She smiled a quick conspirator's smile with Cheryl and turned to the man. Come in! She said brightly and held out her hand. He turned back from the garden to face her. He stared straight at her, frankly and blatantly. She felt naked under his gaze. She practically was naked. But she found herself staring right back at him, because he was terribly burned. One side of his head was just a mass of shiny, pink scars. She kept her polite smile frozen in place and kept her hand extended towards him. He paused, brought his hand up to meet it. But it wasn't a hand. It was a shining metal hook. Not an artificial hand, not a clever prosthetic device, just a wicked metal curve made of gleaming steel.